Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Nowadays, just about everybody has a cell phone. But let's take a moment and think back to the early days of telecommunication when having a phone book still mattered. And we actually knew our friends' numbers by heart. Back then, making a prank call was as easy as picking up the rotary phone and dialing. But between caller ID and unlisted numbers, pranking isn't quite as easy as it used to be. That doesn't mean it is completely disappeared. It's just become more specialized. Word of Mouth senior producer Maureen McMurray brings us this story.
Jim Florentine is a stand-up comic, Howard Stern regular, and host of VH1's That Metal Show. If his name doesn't ring a bell, his voice might. He was one of the guys behind Comedy Central's Crank Yankers, you know, that show about the pranking puppets.
Hi, Rich. It's Bobby Fletcher. I'm calling about the job.
What type of sales experience you got?
I've sold everything over the phone.
Name it. You've done it.
Right.
Well, basically what we're doing here, guy, is dealing specifically with, not specifically, taxes. Are you burping?
What?
All right. So that's a pretty good example of what Jim Florentine does best. Like any good prank caller, he is unflappable. He lets things get to this extremely awkward point and never breaks character. But it's actually his early work in the years before he got a paycheck from pranking that I find most compelling. When he was living with a bunch of buddies in a small apartment, passing the time between stand-up gigs with an ingenious prank.
I originally started doing prank calls when I was a kid because I was always grounded for being bad. So I was stuck in the house and I had nothing better to do than to pick up the phone and just call people and bother them. So I started that as a little kid, and then it morphed into being a comic years later. And you know, as a comedian, I had a show at like 10 o'clock at night. I had nothing going on during the day. So whenever a telemarketer would call, I would just sit by my phone and wait for him, you know, to call. And then I would just try to keep him on the phone as long as possible because I had nowhere to go. So I would try to keep him on the phone for like an hour if I could.
Hello?
Hello, James?
Yeah.
I'm giving you a call for credit counseling.
Hello?
For debt consulting.
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, dude, you still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm still on the phone.
Okay.
Hello?
All right, do you have a few moments? Or?
Yeah, I have a few moments, yeah.
Yo, you still on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. Debt consolidation is a program.
You still on, dude? Yeah.
You on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you want, I can give you a call back.
No, this is fine, actually. I got to run out to work a little bit, so I'd rather get this over with now. It was what? Developed what?
Debt consolidation is a program.
Yo, you still on? Yeah.
Okay.
Turns out those calls that he made for his own enjoyment to pass the time between stand-up gigs is what wound up putting him on the map. Howard Stern caught wind of his pranks, and Jim put out a 5-volume series of these pranks called Terrorizing Telemarketers. And he made all of these pranks with one thing in mind: keep the telemarketers on the line as long as possible. And keeping them on the line actually wasn't that hard.
And, you know, they just had 10 people in a row going, you know, F you, don't ever call here again. So they finally get somebody on the phone. They're like, wow, somebody's actually listening and I got somebody. So they're excited.
Did you find that there was a typical response that you would get?
Well, my whole thing was, you know, if they were ready to leave, you know, get off the call and say, look, sir, we'll just call you tomorrow or I got to go. Just like my whole thing was, I'm just trying to get the information. I don't know how this works.
This is frustrating.
I'm reading from a strip, and I know exactly what I just stated.
The part right before the debt relief, you said, what was that?
We are the exclusive agents.
No,
no. You're throwing me for loops right here, and that's all that I have stated.
Okay, but you said that one 3 times. I told you that wasn't it.
Okay, then let me go on to proceed further then.
Okay.
Now, because we are a nonprofit company.
No.
Now, because we are a nonprofit company, we are able to guarantee.
It's not that. No, it's not that part, though. I heard that.
I'm moving on from that.
No.
Well, bye, sir. Because you still hot and knowing, I can't. I'm not taking this from you today.
Shut up.
And that's it. Without cursing, without resorting to threats, Jim simply plays dumb to the point of making the harasser the harassed. It's remarkable and it's hilarious. I laughed the first time I heard it. I still think it's funny. But is it mean? Am I mean for thinking it's funny? Do you ever feel a bit bad for some of these people?
No, because they rip people off. Most of their plans are bogus. You know, they're scams. They're bothering people all the time. They rip off old people constantly. You know, what about the people like, go F you, don't ever call here again, I hate you. You know, that's got to make somebody feel bad on the, you know, the telemarketer, like, oh my God, everybody hates me.
Okay, well, maybe he does have a point, but does it even matter? I mean, why does the prankster have to bear the burden of guilt in this scenario? But what happens when the prank goes too far? I mean, even Jim admits he doesn't know where the line is, and his line, it is way different from ours.
Even with the telemarketer calls, you just never know. Like, there was another telemarketer call that went wrong where my credit card company called me up and said, look, we can transfer $10,000 from my credit card into your bank account in case, you know. And I'm like, okay, and I'm listening. I'm like, all right. She goes, and then all of a sudden she goes, you know, in case something comes up, maybe you needed the money. And right away when she said that, I go, oh, you know, that's perfect. I just hit this old lady with my car, and I got to pay her medical bills.
I just found out I hit that old lady. That hit and run, but...
Oh, well, I hope everything works out all right for you.
Yeah, everything's fine with me. I don't know what's going on with her.
Mm.
Well, she's old.
Now, did you have any other balances out there that you wanted to pay off?
Yeah, because you know what? I'm going to have to pick up this old bag's medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman's like, okay. And I'm like, I go, let me go over these bills real quick. Let me see if this works because this might be good. And then I just started making stuff up. I said, yeah, I visited her at the hospital and I knocked her teeth out. So I got to buy her new teeth. How much are new teeth? Like fake teeth. And the woman's actually going over the prices with me over the phone.
We can take care of that for you right now unless you would like me to try you back at a later time.
No. I mean, I'm just trying to figure this all out if you can give me a second.
Okay.
The dentures, what would you say that goes for?
I couldn't tell you how much the dentures will cost.
All right, so the hearing aid is, I don't know, what do you say, $1,000 for two of them maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
$1,500?
Maybe a little bit more than that.
All right, let's go $2,000 with
okay.
it.
Okay.
Finally, at the end of the call, she's like, okay, what's your account number so we can transfer the money? Now, I don't want them to transfer the money, obviously, so now I got to get out of it. So I'm thinking, how can I get out of this? So I just blurted it out. I go,
you know what? $7,050 I got to pay for this. I think it's just cheaper to just go kill her. Hello?
Okay. I can admit that probably is a line crossed for most people. I was uncomfortable. But in his defense, I will speak in his defense, I mean, this wasn't planned. And he just said the first thing that came into his mind. And as a professional comedian, sometimes what's on the top of your mind might be dark. I mean, you push boundaries for a living. So what wound up happening here is the woman hangs up the phone. Jim thinks, all right, I got out of that situation. She didn't transfer the money into my account. Everything's good. Prank is a success. And then this happens.
45 minutes later, I got two detectives at my door because it was my credit card company that had my address right in front of them. The woman believed it, that I was going to go kill this woman in a hospital. And I had two detectives knocking on my door. And they, you know, came in and started searching my house and looking in rooms because I thought there was like an old lady's dead body in there. And now I'm trying to explain to them, like, look, I do these prank calls. I work on this show called Crank Anchors. And they had my license. They're looking at it, checking everything out. And the guy just looked at it. He goes, you're 32 years old. What is wrong with you?
But here's the thing. Jim's in his 40s now, and he has a wife and a kid. And he's still making prank calls. He's still a stand-up comic. And I bet he still thinks that joke is funny. He'll probably always think that joke is funny. But thank goodness for someone like Jim. Because you know what? The prank call, in the way that we knew it as kids, is dead. We have caller ID. We have phone tracking systems. We have unlisted numbers. Those innocent prank calls we made as kids, those don't exist anymore. Maybe a good prank needs someone like Jim Florentine who will say the things that we won't. And we'll go to the places we won't. And we'll go to the lengths that we just won't to get a laugh. All in the name of keeping prank call alive.
Just doing my thing.
Maureen McMurray there, speaking with professional prankster and stand-up comic Jim Florentine. About 2 years ago, Facebook bought the photo-sharing app Instagram for somewhere around $1 billion. Critics and media watchers balked at the price and wondered if Facebook would get its money's worth. Last week, Mark Zuckerberg announced an even higher-priced acquisition, buying the virtual reality company Oculus VR for $2 billion. This may be the first time that non-gamers are hearing about the Oculus Rift. Jamin Warren, founder of Killscreen, a video game culture magazine, is with us to explain why Facebook has put so much stock in virtual reality. Jamin, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well. Listeners who may have heard about this acquisition may not know much about Oculus Rift itself. So can you describe, you know, how you use it, what it looks like?
Sure. So the Oculus Rift device is a virtual reality headset. It's very, very light. And probably people had some experience with virtual reality in the 90s. At the time, the technology wasn't really there to create the types of experiences that you can create now. But it was developed by a teenager from Southern California named Palmer Luckey, who had put together some off-the-part shelves to create a virtual reality system sort of from scratch. He took that to Kickstarter, raised about $2.5 million, which then paved the way for creating a company, took on some VC investment from some heavy hitters in the Valley, and that kind of paved the way for an acquisition. Although I don't think anyone thought it was going to happen quite so quickly.
Have you ever tried one on? How do you do it?
I have. It's pretty easy. I mean, it's like putting on a pair of, if you've ever gone scuba diving or something like that, it's roughly about the same experience. You strap it to your head, and then you have to bring your own headphones, so there aren't any headphones that are attached to it.
What's the experience like once you put this headset on?
It's funny. I was admittedly very skeptical before I tried it out, simply because, I, like many people, had kind of tried VR in the 90s when I was a kid. And, it's really, really cool. I mean, it's rare that I try a new piece of technology that feels like it's going to fundamentally alter the way that I experience media. But that certainly is the case with the Oculus. For anyone who's tried it, I mean, it recreates certain types of experiences that I think would be very, very hard to capture, like flying, for example. I mean, that's like a pretty simple one that people have dreamed about, which it just feels so much more realistic with an Oculus Rift headset. It's a pretty amazing device.
Wow. Well, Facebook's purchase of Oculus VR, that's the company behind the Rift, has sparked an ugly backlash. What's behind that?
Sure. Well, I think there's two different sides to it. One is from the Kickstarter backers. The Kickstarter, part of the narrative of Kickstarter is that you go there because, traditional funding sources aren't available to you. And creators and founders, they sell this vision that we really need your help, right? And the end outcome of this is that the $2.5 million that went into the company benefits the VC and the investors who put money in later, not the original Kickstarter backers. Now, all the Kickstarter people signed up for is to get a virtual reality headset, the dev kit, which has been available for sale for the past year. But I think there's this sense that the money that went in wasn't necessarily for this big $2 billion exit. The other sentiment of the backlash comes from, I think, from gamers who, for a long time, I think, and this is a longer conversation, but, gamers are often treated as being, backwater or not interested in the future of technology. And there's a sense that sort of the party's over, specifically for independent game designers who maybe were pinning their hopes to it. So, because Facebook is this huge, huge Fortune 500 company, there's this sense that this scrappy little upstart was kind of was smothered in its infancy. I don't necessarily see it that way, but that's where the backlash is coming from.
The Oculus Rift is certainly not yet a mass market item, but you mentioned there are these dev kits, development kits that people are using. What are some of the ways that the Oculus Rift has been used besides gaming?
Yeah, I've seen a couple amazing prototypes. I know from the world of games, I tried a space fighting game called Eve Valkyrie, which is amazing. I've never operated something that felt like it was in 3D space. There was a Canadian musician who used it to record a song. You basically show up in the room, you put on the headset, and he sits down at a camera, and then you can rotate and look all the way around stage. I mean, Chris Milk, the director, has used it to record Beck, the musician Beck, live on stage. So you can pop on an Oculus Rift headset and watch Beck play. It's as if you're right there next to him. There's a lot of potential here. Tourism is one that, I think I'm very excited about. I'm never going to climb Mount Everest, but it's possible for me to maybe experience that by proxy, or, I'm not going to have courtside seats to the Final Four, but, the Oculus Rift does open the possibility for me to experience those things by proxy, and a very convincing proxy at that.
Well, any idea of how Mark Zuckerberg and a social network like Facebook would use it?
Yeah, I think that that's the big question that everyone has. I mean, admittedly, there, you know, there are some concerns there. Facebook doesn't have a track record with hardware. This is a hardware device. You know, Facebook's business model is advertising supported. Right now, you know, the Oculus Rift was chiefly designed for people to sell experiences. I think what it reflects is Oculus fits into, I think, a larger philosophical framework for Facebook. Facebook wants to be the center of your communication world. They want to control all the different ways that you interact with the outside world. And I think that they're looking at virtual reality the same way that someone might have looked at, say, smartphones, say, 10, 15 years ago. I don't think that the Oculus Rift is going to be the only virtual reality device, but Facebook wants to jump to the head of the line and start seeing, looking for ways to integrate it into their existing package, whether it's with Instagram or with Facebook or with WhatsApp or whatever that might be. This might ostensibly be one of the delivery mechanisms for Facebook products, the same way that Facebook develops things for mobile. So, you know, time will tell. It's certainly a speculative investment at some level, but Facebook is, you know, it was a mostly stock deal, so they're not putting a lot of cash up front to purchase the company. And, you know, obviously Facebook has been on quite a buying spree over the past 12 to 18 months.
Damon Warren is with us. He's founder and editor-in-chief of Killscreen, a video game culture magazine and website. Is this strategic on Facebook's part? Are they trying to get an upper hand or maybe trying to gain a little bit of an edge on wearable technology like Google Glass, that sort of thing?
So one of the interesting things about the Oculus is that, you know, in terms of a piece of technology, there are some breakthroughs with existing pieces and existing patents, but it's not like what Facebook is buying is something like Apple, for example. They own, you know, patents for slide to refresh and multi-touch, and obviously have been embroiled in big lawsuits about new technologies like with Samsung, et cetera. That's not the case with Oculus. And so I think this deal, what it represents is two things. I think one is that the Oculus Rift, there's going to be competition in that space, and I think Oculus certainly knows that. And the flip side is that Facebook wants to, you know, remain in the vanguard of what's cool, new, and interesting. And, you know, in some ways they get more PR out of these acquisitions than they do when they roll out new incremental updates to the news feed, for example. So it might be a weird way to spend, you know, $2 billion, but given that it was leveraged mostly by stock, not by cash up front, yeah, I think you could look at it as a way that Facebook wants to be ahead of the curve and maybe gobble up Oculus before somebody else does, an Apple, a Microsoft, or a Google.
Damon Warren, founder and editor-in-chief of Killscreen. That's a video game culture magazine and website. Thank you very much for your time.
Of course, anytime. Let me tell you.
You for spending a little bit of your weekend with Word of Mouth. If you do like what you heard, there's much more to explore at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us. You can send us your feedback or share your ideas for the program on Facebook and on Twitter. After all, the most fascinating stories tend to travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. We'll be back with more on Monday at noon, right here on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Zach Nugent,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.